Islamic education. Education from an Islamic perspective involves or could be considered an act of worship. It involves a teacher, student, and knowledge which is transferred between them. The teacher and the student have both been described as being in particularly sacred positions. The student, one who seeks knowledge, is referred to as being in the path to paradise and teaching, that is guiding others to the truth. Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had said that if a person is guided by one of us to the truth, it is worth more than all that is in this world. And the knowledge itself is sacred in the sense that its origin is from Allah. As Allah describes what makes so the whole process of education is considered to be ibadah, worship. Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, had said seeking knowledge is compulsory on every Muslim. You know, so to obey this command of the Prophet ﷺ, to seek knowledge as he has commanded, is an act of worship. You know, because we worship God by following the instructions of his Prophet. And the knowledge, as I said, is itself something from God. It is divine or of divine origin, in the sense that, you know, Allah, in distinguishing human beings from the rest of his creation, putting them in a special status, it was through knowledge. Knowledge which he gave human beings, which was not given to the rest of his creation. And this is the essence of what God states when the angels questioned the creation of man, that he knew what they didn't know, and he taught Adam the names of all things. He gave Adam knowledge, the ability to give names to things, which is and to discover the relationships between them. And I mean, basically the essence of it is of discovering the laws and the principles which govern the world in which he lives, you know, which were put there by Allah. So the knowledge, which is true knowledge, is essentially from God. The knowledge which governs the universe that we are in on a physical level, biological level, all of these laws are laws which God has put in his creation to govern different aspects of it. Human beings discover these laws. So they're discovering the laws, they're gaining knowledge which God has revealed to them. And it is as he decides to reveal to them. It's not as human beings may perceive, that it is through their efforts and they are able to discover, you know, as it was attributed to Francis Bacon, that you have to battle with nature to get this knowledge. You know, it's human beings fight with nature, which will ultimately nature gives off its secrets, you know, by the struggle that human beings have to have with it. But, you know, by God revealing to them at different stages, you know, as is demonstrated in the circumstances wherein scientists were seeking different sections of knowledge or segments of knowledge, and then other things came out of their experiments, other things were revealed to them in the course of these efforts. Even in the area of the, what may be called the social sciences, etc., you know, I mean, the human beings are discovering relationships, for example, between children, how they learn, between human beings, how they relate with each other, you know, psychology, sociology, these studies, though they're to a large degree, a number of theories and concepts have come out of them which are very much anti-Islamic or very much anti-God, you know, secular in their view, you know. The fact of the matter is this is an interpretation of information which has been gained. It is not in and of itself, the information gained is not itself false, maybe true information, but how that that information is interpreted now will determine, you know, whether it is correct or not. If this is consequently knowledge as a whole, I mean, though when the Prophet had instructed people to seek knowledge, it was knowledge for both this life and the next, the knowledge which is critical in both this life, you know, and in preparation for the next. This is the knowledge which has to be given priority. However, the knowledge which is necessary to help the community survive, to which is that additional acquired knowledge which human beings need to gain to establish viable communities, etc. I mean, this knowledge is also required. It becomes compulsory by the very nature that this community needs it, though it's not an individual obligation. The fundamental difference which exists between Islamic education and un-Islamic or non-Islamic education, or education which is a product of Western culture, which is the dominant world culture today, is that the Islamic education has a different outlook, or there's a different concept behind it in terms of the purpose of that education. From a Western perspective, you know, which tends to be fundamentally a materialist perspective, the purpose is to prepare individuals to take their role in, you know, providing for their material needs and the material needs of the society, right? And education, though people like to think of it in terms of something which can be divorced of values and just be a process of transfer of knowledge, the reality is that, you know, values are being transferred, because education, as, you know, some scholars have defined it, is really a transfer of culture. It is a way by which the culture of the society is conveyed to its members and to the coming generations. Since Islam and the knowledge of Islam deals with both this life and the next, and in fact considers the next life to be the greater or more important phase of of human existence, and that this life, in fact, is a preparation for that next phase, or a period of development and growth in preparation for that phase, then this concept is conveyed or is basic to education, Islamic education, that any subject, when we look at the issue of knowledge, first and foremost, we have to consider the knowledge which is being conveyed, you know, by which the society educates its members, by which the society raises or develops its members. This knowledge may be divided or may be looked at from a number of different perspectives. Imam Ghazali divided up knowledge into basically six different categories. And the first basic division is that of knowledge which is true knowledge, because when we talk about knowledge, we're really talking about information, facts, and information, which is true knowledge, and knowledge which is false knowledge. The real and the true knowledge, this is fundamentally from Allah. And the false knowledge is from Satan. It is the way by which Satan, satanic forces, the evil forces, misguide the creatures, deviate them from the path which Allah has prescribed for them. And this process began with regards to human beings and their education. It began in the Garden of Eden. Allah educated Adam and Eve to what was permissible for them in the garden, which was everything except for a particular tree. That was the knowledge, that was the divine knowledge which was revealed to them. Satan intervened and suggested to them that were they to eat of the tree, it would make them like the angels, eternal beings. It would make them eternal beings, or eternal beings like God. Now, this was false knowledge, that human beings would be like the angels, or that they would be eternal, only like God. This is the attributes of God which belong only to God. This was false knowledge. And based on the human desire, you see, once this concept was introduced, the idea of living forever, you know, it is part of human nature not to want to die, then it led those human beings to disobey Allah. The false knowledge caused them or led them, once they accepted that false knowledge, it led them to the disobedience of Allah. And as such, that disobedience, that false knowledge, which led them to disobedience, led them into sin, into evil. So, when one is involved in the process of education, whether on a primary level, secondary, or higher levels of higher learning, one has to consider the body of knowledge which is being conveyed, whether in fact it is true knowledge or whether it is false knowledge. For example, an aspect of false knowledge which now plays a major role in Western education is that of the Darwinian theory of evolution. Though the Darwinian theory is oftentimes misunderstood to be merely a biological interpretation or fact, the reality is that this theory has affected virtually every single branch of the sciences, whether the pure sciences or the social sciences. It is a fundamental principle which is a fundamental principle which is the basis of the secular democratic view of Western culture, which now represents the world culture. That secular view has its roots, the secular view in which religion, the concepts of God, are divorced from all walks of human life. This view is based on the fact that human beings have evolved from a common ancestor with the apes. And as such, the concept of God itself is a figment of human imagination. Another example of false knowledge would be the seeking of a cure for death or a cure for old age or a way or means to create life, create living beings. I mean, all of these would be classified as false knowledge because of the fact that Allah, through His Prophet, has informed us that there is no cure for death or old age. And Allah has stated that human beings, the whole of creation, could not even create a fly, even if they all got together with all the knowledge they had, they would not be able to create even a fly. True knowledge may be further divided from an Islamic perspective into useful knowledge and useless knowledge, as the concept that knowledge for the sake of knowledge or for knowledge's sake is foreign to the Islamic way of thinking or Islamic view. Allah revealed knowledge for a purpose, for the benefit of man. knowledge which is of no benefit, which doesn't benefit human beings, is knowledge which should be avoided. And Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, in one of his favorite supplications, used to seek refuge in knowledge which was of no benefit. وَأَعُوذُ بِكَ مِنْ عِلْمٍ لَا يَنْفَعَ. Now, the lack of benefit may be relative, you know, or benefit may be relative in and of itself. So, in the process of transferal of knowledge, there needs to be some kind of prioritization, that the pressing and more immediate needs of human beings should be given precedence over long-term needs, you know, or projected needs in the process of education also. Morality plays a major role in the process or in the content, or I shouldn't say the content, perhaps I should say in the conveyance of Islamic knowledge, in that the essence of the Islamic message is in fact focused on morality. The Prophet, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, had said that he was only sent to perfect for human beings the highest of character traits. So the essence of Islamic teachings is that of developing a moral individual, one with a sense of right and wrong, which is based on divine criteria. In the human being's relationship with God, with his fellow human beings, with the community around him, and with the environment in which he lives. There are moral principles which govern all these spheres of human relations. And the knowledge which is gained, or which is conveyed, and which we refer to as the process of education, should then carry with it, or should then have as its guiding principle the development, well, let's not say the development, let's say instead that when the knowledge is being conveyed, that is, knowledge which is not specifically religious, you know, we could say the revealed knowledge, where we divide knowledge into the two categories of the revealed knowledge and the acquired knowledge, right, human, you know, which human beings have gained through experimentation and empirical studies, etc. You know, that knowledge which we tend to refer to as science and the various sciences, and that knowledge, when it is being conveyed, it should be conveyed within the confines of the moral principles which have been outlined by revelation, and which would then guide, I mean, these moral principles would provide guidelines as to how this knowledge may be used. Because the fact of the matter is that, scientific experimental knowledge is neutral. How that knowledge is utilized may be good or evil. This is where the morality comes in. So education should impart to the students in the process of the transferal of knowledge a sense of morality, which would guide them in utilizing that knowledge in a way which is beneficial to human society. Because Islamic education, or the process of imparting Islamic knowledge, is considered to be an act of worship, as I earlier mentioned, the teacher must possess certain qualities to be qualified to impart knowledge in an Islamic way. That teacher has to himself or herself look at their role or their job as being ibadah. If they do not consider this role to be anything more than a means of earning a living, for which they are paid, etc., meaning that it is only looked at from a materialist perspective, then the information which is being conveyed will be seriously hampered. Of course, the necessary qualifications for teaching, which include those qualifications which have already been established in the Western models, in the Western systems, I mean, these are not to be excluded simply because they were not developed by Muslims, for example, or in an Islamic context. Where there are sound principles of education, where sound principles of education have been developed, which take into account the psychology of children, etc., etc., then these principles should be used and should be taught. You know, for example, and the principles again should be divorced from their ideological roots, if those roots are unacceptable or against Islamic teachings. You know, for example, the modern approach to learning in the classroom, which is referred to as collective learning, where the traditional one-on approach of the straight-ahead teacher-student approach, where it's just the teacher imparting knowledge to the students. You know, I mean, it has been shown from numerous studies that where the children participate in both the learning and teaching process, that much more learning takes place in such a setting. Now, this principle, as it developed, some people gave ideological reasoning to its foundation as being an expression of the democratic process. You know, where, you know, all the students have a say, and they should have a say, and they're being trained in this democratic process. You know, but of course, the democratic process, which, you know, rejects absolute truths, and which gives human reason the status of defining for society right and wrong, you know, right and wrong as on an overall scale, I mean, is rejected from an Islamic perspective. But because of the fact that the absolute rights and wrongs do exist, you know, morality isn't relative. I mean, this is based on divine revelation. So that's the Islamic perspective. But now, that doesn't deny the reality that in the collective learning process, more learning takes place, where students are involved in teaching each other. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean that the student has to be on the same level as the teacher, in the sense that the opinion of the student, you know, is as valid as the opinion or the information which is being given by the teacher. No, I mean the teacher still maintains that status as being the instructor and is respected and etc., you know, as Islam requires. But yet, you know, collective learning can still or simultaneously take place, and this is not something new to the Muslim world in terms of education, because the traditional schools in which the Quran is taught, I mean, till today, follow principles in collective learning. The Quranic teacher